Twitter if you would indulge us for a moment. You know, one of the most interesting things about Twitter is it connects celebrities directly to their fans and vice versa. Many celebrities actually do the tweeting themselves, which means pretty much anytime you like, you can send a message to them, and unless it's someone like Justin Bieber who has 18 million followers, they will probably read it. Your message goes right to their computer or into their pocket, which can be good and it can also be bad, and we like to focus on the bad here at this show. So in anticipation of Twitter's 6th anniversary, we asked some celebrities to read some of their favorite tweets from fans. These are real tweets sent to and about the people you're about to see, and we present them to you now via the old-fashioned magic of television. Enjoy.
Yeah, David Cross is not my kind of comedian.
Hey, Roseanne, get a life.
It's people like Kathy Griffin who are the root causes for why redheads are perceived as the spawn of Satan.
Did you know that if you skinned Larry King and ironed out his leather, you could make enough coats to give one to every poor child in America?
Dear God, give us back Tupac and we'll give you Justin Bieber.
Selena Gomez is on the radio right now. Is there a volume lower than mute? Sorry.
My Asian orthodontist says Jessica Biel has horse teeth.
I just saw Jessica Alba. If this was 2007, I'd be really excited.
Kate Mara is on the list of people who I don't understand why anyone likes.
Kelly Ripa is kind of amazing when you think about how hard it must be to balance that huge head on a tiny body.
Whenever someone tells me that I look like Andy Samberg, they're basically saying, guess how big your nose is? Very big.
Nick Offerman's hands seem crazy small compared to his head.
There are people who think Julia Roberts is hot. Her gigantic mouth looks like it will devour an elephant in one bite. Thank you, Chemotherapy 7, and good luck.
Minnie Kaling is not funny or attractive. She has an annoying voice and just plainly sucks. Why does she have her own show? I feel like this is more than 140 characters.
David Blaine looks like his voice is putting his face to sleep.
Don Rickles looks like Yoda.
It's hard when people say mean things about you. It's hard. How many of you like, let's do a little survey. How many of you like it when people say mean things about you? How many of you want to say mean things back when people say mean things about you? How many of you didn't raise your hand because you're a liar? The rest of you should raise your hand. How many of you didn't raise your hand because you don't like to raise your hand when people ask you to raise your hand? Gotcha. Oh, goodness gracious. Well, let me kind of, for those of you who are new with us this week, I want to catch you up. We have been in this series called What Would Jesus Tweet? If Jesus were alive today, it'd be difficult for him to gather all of his followers to him. So we thought maybe he would take to Twitter to tell us what he has to say. The beginning of Matthew chapter 5 says this, seeing the crowds, he went up the mountain, and when he sat down, his disciples came to him. Verse 2, he opened up his mouth, and he taught them, saying, and then he said these things. So back in that day, rabbis would walk around. Their closest followers would follow right behind. He would talk as he was walking. And then when he would see that there was a large enough crowd, he would sit down on a mountaintop, usually on a mountaintop, and speak downward so that people could hear him. Or near an ocean or a sea, he would speak near the sea so that the waves would reflect it back. But the people would gather in as close as they could so that they could hear him the best that they could. So what we thought is, how can we gather around the feet of Jesus and hear what he would have to teach us? The trick is, in Twitter, you're only allowed to use 140 characters, letters, spaces, punctuation, any of that. I'm not going to recap all of these, but I want you to see, kind of going through Matthew chapter 5. We're going to finish chapter 5 today. We'll see what Jesus would have said in 140 characters or less five times. Here's the Beatitudes. Blessed are the poor in spirit, the meek, the sad, who hunger for righteousness, the pure in heart, the peacemaker, the persecuted. Be glad, your reward is great in heaven. Blessed are all these people. When you get this, then your reward is great in heaven. Week two, you are salt on the earth, light in the world, a city on a hill. Give flavor and light to the world so that others see God and give him glory. So the purpose of the Beatitudes, the purpose for you living this way is so that other people see God and give him glory. Now Jesus is talking to a crowd of people who had probably been taught in the Jewish world. They knew stories about God. So Jesus said, I didn't come to abolish the law, but to fulfill it. Relax one and be the least, but keep them and be called great in the kingdom of heaven. Jesus is telling you, hey, you've heard all of the stories, you know all of this, but here's what I want to do. Rather than attach you, your heart, rather than attach you, your mind, to the stories of God, I want to attach you to the God behind the stories. And the God behind the story says, here are the rules. I'm not doing away with them. I'm sending my son to fulfill them, to keep them. And his name is great. Next, it said, don't murder. Hate is the same thing. Some of your translations might have said anger. Hate is the same thing. Make amends before you come to worship and then give your gifts. Move first before you go to jail. And so Jesus establishes there are rules that you've heard said, and there's a God behind the rules. And I want you to hear about the God behind the rules, because if you don't hear all of this, there might be some jail time for you. Another survey, how many of us are looking forward to some jail time? Tricked you all again, because I knew none of you were going to raise your hand. All right? Last week, I'll tell you what, guys. This is the week, this is the reason I became a pastor. I just so looked forward to what we talked about last week. It said, don't cheat. Lust is the same thing. Adultery kills the family. Remember your vows. Say yes, mean yes. I'm serious. I look forward all week to coming here and talking to you about lust and sex and divorce and all of these things, because it's so fun. It's so fun to tell you that God has a standard. God has drawn a line in the sand, and that line is called holiness. And he is expecting us to keep that, because he himself keeps that. And so we talked about that. So go back in time via the magic of the internet, the interwebs, if you will, cityviewchurch.tv/media, and you can watch all of these messages so that you can understand what Jesus was teaching us through this. You're going to hear some great confessions from me on the week of anger about how I've just been struggling with being angry lately. And last night, while I was thinking about this message, I understood why. I'm starting to get it. Jesus is saying it's about time. You and I have been working on this for a long time. It's about time. So I'm glad it took you 6 weeks into this series. I'm glad it took 4 or 5 weeks in advance studying for this series. I'm really glad that you and I are finally starting to click, get on the same page. So today we're coming to the next section. This is the last two sections of Matthew chapter 5. But before we do that, I'm going to just talk a minute about justice. We all are born innately with this idea of justice. It's something inside of us, because God is the God of justice. And so we innately understand that there is right and wrong. The first sin was God said, don't eat from that tree. That tree was the knowledge of good and evil. Adam and Eve ate from it, and the day you eat from it, dying, you will surely die. And so now you and I were born in the image of God, the God of justice, in the image of Adam, or the offspring of Adam, understanding there is a right and a wrong. Our understanding of right and wrong usually leads us to retaliation and revenge, right? If you don't believe me, head over to the park today. In the middle of the park, there's going to be a slide, a jungle gym, maybe a merry-go-round. Just sit on a bench. This is weird. Take a kid with you, because if you go to the park and sit there and watch kids without a kid, you might get in trouble. But watch the kids. When someone does something wrong, they pounce all over each other like jungle cats to make right what has been done wrong, right? You know what? How about this? If you don't have a kid to take with you to the park, once you get in your car, head out on 890 towards exit 24, either take 87 to the Northway or keep going on 90. Either way, you're going to see retaliation and revenge acted out on the world's grandest stage, the interstate, right? Because somebody has done me wrong and they're driving too slow, and the only way to let them know that they're driving too slow is to get right up on them. Give them the finger. Mr. Gene said that. That's awesome. See, there are things in your 90th year that you can do that you can't do in your 36th year. Oh, man, that was awesome. Or maybe someone cuts you off. So what's the only appropriate response to being cut off? Whip around, speed up, cut them off, and then slam on your brakes. Right? Retaliation and revenge acted out in the most dangerous setting humanly imaginable, because it's not just your life you're putting in danger. My uncle once said that the freeway would be a lot easier if each car was allowed to carry one grenade. Because everybody would fall in line. Because you cut me off, I throw a grenade at you, and your life is over. So everybody falls in line. My uncle is a redneck from Texas, and I would not recommend following any of his logic. It's bad news. But this retaliation and revenge leads us to a place where we don't want to be. Where I've been angry over these last few weeks, I want to retaliate. I want to get revenge, and the Lord has been, I would like to say he's been massaging me, but that's not what he's been doing. He's been pounding on me, and it's been painful. How many of you either like to or like to watch shows about home renovations, HGTV, where you look in, these people go into this home, and they look, and they see this house, and it could be this. And, you know, if you took this wall and moved it over there, you took that wall, make it a half wall, this, take these two bedrooms, make one big bedroom. My thing is, listen, if you want a house with a big bedroom, just buy a house with a big bedroom. You know, there's no need to buy a house with two small bedrooms, rip them apart and make two big bedrooms. Just buy one house with a big bedroom. You want a house with a big closet, just get a house with a big closet. But these people, there's like some sort of magic going on inside of their head where they can see what could be, and it takes them ripping down these walls. My family and I were had the opportunity to buy a house a few years ago from a family member who had, I guess a friend of a family member who had passed on, and what we were going to do is we were going to put a little bit of money in the house, sell it, make a little bit of money. It was going to take 6 to 8 weeks. And we were going to put this much money in, and we were going to make this much money. While we were going, the inspector comes out and says, hey, your house was built in the 30s. All of your wiring is outdated. You need to change all of the wiring. Well, there's only one way to change the wiring. You rip the sheetrock off the wall. We're ripping things apart. That part's the fun part. That's the part, that's the only part of the process where I have any skill, is tearing stuff up, which I found out the hard way. Not that easy. You can actually mess things up. So, okay, we got this guy in. He changes out all of the wiring. House, the wiring in the house is up to code. He comes back to inspect it. Ooh, this house was built when the code was that the studs are 20 inch on center. Now the code is 16 inches on center. You're going to need to add new studs. And there's a lot more work involved. Now we start to see the amount of money that we thought we were going to make and divide amongst us, maybe go on a vacation, and that money starts to dwindle, and the time starts to expand. And the process was painful. And the same thing happens when God comes in and he says, here's the standard of holiness. Here's who I want you to be. But to do that, I have to come in, and I have to see that this wall is better a half wall. This wall and this wall need to disappear because I can get a much grander space in there. I can do things that you couldn't believe. And so he looks in you and sees the you that he made you to be. not the you that you are, but it's painful. You have to come to some self-realizations through the work of His Spirit. Then you have to take those self-realizations and move them into action again with the work of His Spirit, becoming who He wants you to be. So then, now we go back and we see, you've heard it said, thou shalt not murder. But I say to you, even if you're angry with your brother. And so He says, I'm not coming to abolish the law. I'm coming to fulfill it. So what He's saying is maybe there's something inside of the law that doesn't really point you to the God behind the story, the God behind the law. So let's take a look. Verse 38. While you're turning there, Matthew chapter 5, verse 38, I'll tell you guys a little story. Last night, I like to read from my Bible. I like to hold it in my hands. But Tripper is off helping his parents do a job in Boston. I think Tripper's just vacationing in Boston with his family. But either way, so I was trying to read from my Bible whilst controlling the screen from my iPad, and it was the worst reading job I've ever done. So today, I'm going to read from the screen just like you do. Right, you ready? You've heard it said, an eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth. You've heard, you know, Jesus keeps saying these, you've heard it saids. You've heard it said this, but I say to you this. On this one, you've heard it said, eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth. This comes from a Latin phrase known as le taliones, or the law of the talon, or the law of the claw. And it's found to some degree in the Old Testament. It's found a lot in the Semitic teachings back then, even back into this hymn of Ribai. The code of, what, you say Hammurabi, I say Ham of Ribai. It doesn't matter. It comes from that code. But remember a few weeks ago, we heard from Pastor Jay, I didn't come to abolish the law, I came to fulfill it. Let's do a little Bible trivia. For those of you who don't like to raise your hand, we'll just call out the answer. Okay, does anyone know where we find the Ten Commandments? In the Bible. Exodus where? 20. Exodus 20, that's right. The second time we find it is in Deuteronomy 5. All right, but Exodus chapter 20, we get the Ten Commandments. The very next chapter over, we read this. But if there is harm, then you shall pay life for life, eye for eye, tooth for tooth, hand for hand, foot for foot, burn for burn, wound for wound, stripe for stripe. From the very Bible that we are reading from, Jesus is saying, you've heard it said, eye for an eye, right there. This is actually one that shows up in three different places. This sounds a lot like how I like things to happen. You do to me, I do to you. You do to me, I do to you. You paint a stripe on me. I'm sure that's not the stripe that they're talking about, but you paint a stripe on me, I paint a stripe on you. You wound me, I wound you. You take my foot, foot, hand, hand, eye, life, life. That sounds, let's be honest, that sounds fair, right? Sounds like justice. Except for this. How many of you would be satisfied if someone took your foot? How many of you would be satisfied if we took their foot? No, you take my foot, we're going to need to go a little higher. Let's go up to the knee. Oh, you take my foot, let's take both your feet. And then we find ourselves out on the interstate, one-upping each other. You gun it up on me, I slam on my brakes. You swoop around me, slam on your brakes. You take the grenade, game over, blue car wins, red car loses. Right? Because you and I have this broken sense about us. There's brokenness inside of us, and so we are never satisfied with justice. We want to win. Even more so in America, we want to win. You know how many people watched the World Cup while America was in it? We were winning. Of course, we didn't really win. We won 2-1. But we were really excited about that one win and that one tie. Because that means we didn't lose twice. So really 500 if you count it. Because we're Americans and we like to win. And so that's not just Americans, but that's humans. We want to one-up the person before us. And Jesus is saying, listen, you've heard it said, eye for an eye, but you will never be satisfied with eye for an eye. And since you can't be satisfied with justice, I got a new way for you to think. You've heard it said, eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth, but I say to you, do not resist the one who is evil. But if anyone slaps you on the right cheek, turn to him the other also. Listen, I got slapped in the face yesterday by a four-year-old. The last thing in this world I wanted to do was say, now the Bible, now Jesus would say, you got to slap me on the other cheek too. Right? Little story behind it. Okay, I wasn't really slapped by a four-year-old. I mean, I really was slapped by a four-year-old. But four-year-old, 10-year-old kind of at each other. Four-year-old says, she did this. So I said, well, do you want me to slap her? And she said, yes. And so my 10-year-old and I, we've been working on this theatrics, right? So I said, all right, I'm going to slap her. And I get her face, just enough of my hand showing. So I slapped her, but I really hit my hand. And then Grace says, but Daddy, I didn't do anything to you, so I get to slap you. Well, you know what? The beef was between you two, so I slapped her for you, but I didn't really do it. So Grace comes to me, slaps her hand. Ah! Oh. Four-year-old says, can I try it? I said, yeah, hold on. Let me explain this to you for a second. I didn't really slap Grace, and Grace didn't really slap me. Okay, here's what happened. She put her hand behind my hand, and bam, right in the middle of the explanation, I get slapped in the face. Last thing in the world I wanted was to say, found my loophole. Jesus said if someone slaps you in the right cheek, turn to them the other, and you slap me on the left side so I don't have to get slapped again. But you know what happened? Immediately after she slapped me, she started crying, turned and faced the wall, and got as close to it as she could. And I said, why are you crying? And she said, because you're angry with me. Because she, at 4 years old, understands revenge and retaliation. She, at 4 years old, understands our innate desire to get even. Over the last several weeks, in my anger, I have not done a good job showing her that revenge and retaliation are not a good idea. She yells at me. I started out doing real good. You yell, I whisper. But at some point, whispering stopped working, and so I started yelling back. We meet yell for yell. We meet because we struggle with revenge and retaliation. So Jesus is painting us this new picture. But if anyone slaps you in the right cheek, turn to him the other also. And if anyone would sue you and take your tunic, let him have your cloak as well. This was another thing that eluded me while I lived in Texas when winter is 40 degrees. Right? I thought it was cold. It's 40 outside. This is cold. This is like North Pole. This is freezing. I moved here. If someone sues me for my cloak or my coat, I'm supposed to give them my jacket too? I didn't even own a coat. Now I bought a coat. Now someone's suing me for my coat, and I'm just standing there shivering in my t-shirt because Jesus is saying, listen, remember back to the city on a hill thing? You're supposed to show them who I am in everything that you would do. Man, Jesus is counterintuitive, to say the least, right? He is changing the way we think. And if anyone forces you to go 1 mile, go with him 2 miles. Back in this day, Rome was the world. Rome ruled the world. Government officials could force you to go with them up to a distance of 1 mile to be their slave, for no payment, for a distance of up to 1 mile. Jesus is saying, if someone forces you to go 1 mile, do it one better and go 2 miles. I didn't even want to go the first mile, Jesus. You're telling me to want to go the second mile? We'll get to that in a minute. He's not asking you to want to do that. Give to the one who begs you and do not refuse the one who would borrow from you. And I will bet you every single one of us struggles with this one. How many of you have been in a downtown area of anywhere and someone walks up to you and mysteriously has something going on in another part of the state? They need a bus ticket to get there and they're $1 short. I just get $1 from you. I just need $1. I need to get here because a family's happening and bus ticket costs $1.98. Where can you go on a bus for $1.98, by the way? And I've got 98 cents, but I need a dollar. And what do we do? Oh, man, I don't carry cash. Oh, it's this darn world we moved in. Computers and credit cards. I don't have any. That's a lie. I got a 20 and a 1 in my pocket. But Jesus is saying, give to the one who would beg from you. Give to the one. And don't refuse someone who would borrow from you. More, you've heard it said. You've heard it said, you shall love your neighbor and hate your enemy. But I say to you, love your enemy and pray for those who persecute you, so that you may be sons of your Father who is in heaven. For he makes the sun to rise on the evil and on the good. He sends rain on the just and the unjust. For if you love those who love you, what reward? It doesn't even matter. I'm reading off the screen. I can't even see it. If you love those who love you, what reward do you have? Do not even the tax collectors do the same? And if you only greet your brothers, what more are you doing than others? Do not even the Gentiles do the same? You therefore must be perfect. Some of your translations say holy, as your Father in heaven is holy. You must be perfect. So let's wrap all that up into 140 characters. Four slides down into 140 characters. This was the most fun game I've ever played. Eye for an eye, I say turn your cheek to them. Love and pray for your enemy. Give and go the extra mile. Let them bring out your best because God is holy. Be like him. Jesus is establishing this standard of holiness. And he's explaining to us why revenge and retaliation is not our job. Because what is the aim of revenge and retaliation? Ultimately, you do to me, I do back. The aim of that is peace, right? I want to be even. I want peace with you. But Jesus is pointing to us in our broken nature that we could never achieve peace by taking revenge into our own hands. Paul writes over in Romans, we're told not to seek revenge and retaliation for injuries we suffer at others' hands. Paul wrote, beloved, do not avenge yourselves, but rather give place to wrath. For it is written, vengeance is mine, says the Lord. I will repay. So it's not our job, and here's why. Because we cannot establish peace, because you and I know nothing of peace. Until the Holy Spirit comes in us, and remember, Jesus has drawn this line in the sand. You're here. Holiness is here. Or back to our picture of flipping houses. Jesus has this picture of this house in mind. It is the best house that anyone could ever hope to live in. But right now, you're still this old junker fixer-upper. So he's in the process of taking down this wall and moving this one. He's saying, you know what? This anger, it's got to go. This lust, man, it can't be here. We got to take that out. Man, this divorce is wrecking not only your life, but the life of your kids. We gotta heal hearts. We've got to put things back to the way they should have been. And now he's telling us, revenge and retaliation will never get you where you want to go. Peace is the ultimate destination, and you can't do it. Which is a picture of our peace with God. You see, because of our sin, because of this lust and this anger, these things that keep us apart from God, there was no peace between you and God. But God sent Jesus in to accomplish peace with God for you. And so without Jesus, without his Spirit in you, you cannot accomplish peace. It is not available to you. But now he comes in and he's telling you, when someone asks you to go 1 mile, go with them too. Because when I was on my way to the cross, this guy that was watching along the side, named Simon, was asked to carry your cross for me. And he carried it all the way to the place where I died. When someone would attack you, when someone would do evil against you, then you take it. Because I took the nails, I took the crown, I took the beating that belonged to you. You see, revenge, you see, retaliation does not accomplish for you what you want. Jesus, it was prophesied of Jesus. He was opposed and he was afflicted, yet he opened not his mouth. He was led as a lamb to slaughter, and as a sheep before his shearers is silent. And so he opened not his mouth. Jesus knew that the way to accomplish peace, the way to show people the way to God, a city on a hill, lighting up the landscape so that people can see where they are and see how to get to God, the way to do that is to make peace. And the only way to do that, but God, you don't understand. I've been wronged, and I want to be made right. And the problem is that you are a God, not only a God of justice, but you are a God of mercy, and you are a God of restoration. And so I know if I leave revenge to you, you will forgive those who ask. And I want vengeance. And then he steps down like a dad teaching a son. But you don't understand. You were once at odds with me. There was once a debt that was owed to you, and I forgave you through my son Jesus. Don't they deserve the same right? And if they won't turn from their sin, if they will not repent, then I promise you there is revenge that you could never accomplish, because they will spend eternity separated from me in the fires of hell. Make amends before you come to worship. Move first before you go to jail. That's the line that we had there. And what he's saying is, yes, I am a God of justice. But there's no way for you to be made right with me unless I am also a God of mercy. There is no way for you to be made right with me unless I am a God of redemption and restoration. You see, you are people. I am people of revenge and retaliation, and he is a God of redemption and restoration. Our way of thinking, you've heard it said, eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth. Our way of thinking does not lead to redemption and restoration. And so this morning, we're going to wrap our time up by coming to the table over in the plate. There is a cracker. It's a whole cracker. You come to it and you break it off because you participated in the breaking of the body of Jesus. And you're going to taste that cracker, and it is going to be bland and awful, and you're not going to like it. Painting for us a picture of this idea that forgiveness does not taste good. Forgiveness does not taste good, but it is what we need to do. You've heard it said, love your neighbor and hate your enemy. But I say to you, pray for those who come against you. I told you that God and I have been working out something. I have spent my time over those last few weeks praying for you, praying for your cards, whether it's prayer request cards or guest cards, but I have not been talking to God about this situation. Because I'm a doer, I'm gonna just put your head down and just go until you're through it. I haven't been talking to God, and what we learned back in December in our forgiveness series is that you cannot pray for somebody and your heart towards them not be changed. You cannot pray for a situation and your heart for that situation not be changed. You see, I haven't been tasting forgiveness in my own life. I haven't been praying circles around my family. I haven't been praying these situations, but I've been waiting just to get through them because I don't want to taste them, because they taste bland. They taste gross, and I don't want to taste it. And God said, no, I need you to taste it, because as you begin to taste it, the flavor of it will begin to change. There's something I want to do in you, Greg. You have to let me do it. And I said, God, I don't want you to do it. I just want to get through it. No, you have to. God, I don't want to do it. I just want to get through it. And he said, as I was laying there last night, I don't want you to get through it. You are this junk fixer-up house. And I've got a plan. And you can't just jump from junk fixer-upper to beautiful house. Walls have to come down. Walls have to be moved. Boundaries have to be adjusted. And I don't want you through it. I want you new. And then we take this cup, this grape juice. It's his blood. He says that this is my blood that is shed for you to cover your sin, to make you new. Every time we come to communion, I drink grape juice from this tiny little cup, and I think, man, I really like grape juice. I really like it. This is so yummy. Grape juice is so good. And so there have been times where I buy grape juice, and it sits in the back of my refrigerator until it gets moldy and good for nothing, and I have to pour it out. And what he's saying is, the taste of forgiveness in the beginning is bitter. But as you pray through it, your heart begins to change, and the taste of it is sweet. Do not leave it in the back of your refrigerator to rot, but give it away. Forgive freely, because his blood was shed to forgive freely. So all around the room, let's bow our heads, close our eyes. We don't want to take these elements. We don't want to take this communion lightly. Scripture says, make amends before you come to worship. Leave your gift at the altar and make right what is wrong. And so is there anywhere in your life where you're saying, man, God, I can't keep doing this. Maybe you're like me and God's trying to teach you something and you keep refusing it. And so I have to step back and I say, God, I want to be made new. I want to be holy like you want me to be holy. And it takes pain. And so I'm willing to go through the struggle to get there. Maybe you're here this morning and you've never been made right with God through the blood of Jesus. Maybe like we sang earlier, you're in the middle of the storm and you're just crying out. I got nowhere else to turn. Maybe this whole God thing will help. And I would stand here this morning and tell you that peace is not available to you without the work of the Spirit in your life. But the Spirit can't work in your life until you have been made new through the blood of Christ. You see, he came and lived this life you could never live. He died a death that was owed to you. It was yours. He was buried and was raised to life. Ascended to heaven, sits at the right hand of the Father to say, God, I know that experience. I've been through it. So I wonder this morning, is there anybody here who would say, I've never stepped into the family of God? I've been searching for peace. It seems to elude me at every turn. And I'm ready to be made right with God. So I'm going to count to three and I ask you to raise your hand. There's nothing magic in raising your hand. It's just signifying that you are at the end of you and you are ready to be at the beginning of Him. So if you've never stepped into the family of God, I'm asking you, the time is now. There is peace waiting for you. There is a new creation that is waiting to be made. One, two, three. Let's put your hand up. Good. If that was you this morning, then come and talk to me. I've got a book that I want to send you out with that'll help you get on your road. We'll talk. I might partner you up with somebody. Don't leave here today not knowing this peace with God. We're going to have this song sung over us that God is holy. Jesus is holy. And we want to be like that. He's most high and most worthy of our praise. So as you come to the table this morning, hear this God. Hear this God sung over you, and then begin to sing with it that this is who I am.